Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. You can also catch us anywhere you get your favorite podcast. Just search the Rob O'Donnell Show. Well, it's Friday, and like we do every Friday, we bring in attorney Keith Figure to the Figured Law Group to have Do I Have a Case segment. Keith, thanks for joining us today.
How you doing, Rob? I'm here. I'm kind of stuck in this storm, so hopefully I don't get cut out or anything. It's coming down pretty hard here. My phone was cutting out a little bit earlier, but I should be good.
All right. So let's get right to the first question, though. And it's, I don't agree with my union's political stances and support using my union dues. I inquired about leaving the union in response to my union representative said I would lose all protections and would not receive the same pay benefits in the future. They also went on to tell other union members that I was a scab. What's my rights and do I have recourse for this harassment?
All right. So specifically when you are in a union, your rights, particularly with leaving the union, the right to refrain from union activity, there's a number of sections. I don't want to get into too much detail, but under these different sections, labeled as specifically there's a Section 7 of the NLRA, which is a private sector. Employees have the right to refrain from any or all union activities, including membership without reprisal. And what that means is you can choose not to join or to resign from a union, and your employer and union cannot legally retaliate against you for that decision. Now, union security agreements and right-to-work states. So in states without right-to-work laws, unions and employers can negotiate union security agreements requiring all employees in a bargaining unit to pay union dues or fees. However, in right-to-work states, there's 27 states, which is including Pennsylvania, you cannot be compelled to join a union or pay any dues even if you're covered by a union contract. You can check your, if you have a, if it's a different state than Pennsylvania or you're not sure, you can check your state to see if you are in a right to work state. But that's the difference between, and that's what a lot of people probably heard that term before, is the right to work. So basically what that applies to is your ability not to be forced to pay those dues. Now, as far as the impact on pay and benefits, your union's representative claims that you'd lose all protection and pay benefits is misleading or inaccurate, as it depends on your workplace. So union contract coverage, union contracts typically cover all employees in the bargaining unit, whether you're a union member or not. And I actually deal with this a lot. In fact, some of the individuals that I represent, when you get into certain positions, like of a whether it be supervisory or other, they might not fall under the union that the rest of the employees do. However, even though they're not in the union, they still have a lot of the same rights under that contract, albeit they don't necessarily fall or pay those dues. Now, in terms of the employer's actions, your employer cannot legally reduce your pay or benefits for opting out of the union, as that would violate another section, which would be Section 8A3 of the NLRA, which prohibits discrimination based on union activity or lack thereof. So if your employer threatens or implements such changes, you could file an unfair labor practice, ULP charge, with the National Labor Relations Board. Union misrepresentation, if the union representative is exaggerating or misrepresenting the consequences of leaving, claiming you'll lose all protections when you won't, this can be coercive and potentially violate the NLRA's prohibition of restraining employees' rights to refrain from union activity. Now, resigning from the union, you can resign from the union at any time, but check your union's bylaws or constitution for the procedural requirements, because that's going to usually determine how you do that, because at the end of the day, it is a contract, and you have to follow the requirements as they're contained within that contract. Now, if you're a non-right-to-work state with a union security agreement, you may need to notify the union in writing of your intent to become a, what's called a BEC objector to reduce dues to core representation costs. So I'm not going to get too much into that. That's just a little bit of knowledge and to compare to the difference from a non-right-to-work state and a right-to-work state. Now, in terms of recourse for harassment, being called a scab, the union representative's actions of calling you a scab to other members could constitute harassment or retaliation depending on the context and severity. NLRA protects against union coercion. So under the NLRA, unions are prohibited from restraining or coercing employees in the exercise of their Section 7 rights, including the right to refrain from union activity. Labeling the individual as a scab for worrying about leaving the union could be seen as coercive if it is intended to intimidate or punish the person for exercising the right to resign. Now, if the harassment creates a hostile work environment or interferes with the ability to work, it may also violate work policies under Title 7 of the Civil Rights Act if harassment involves protected characteristics like race or sex. However, I think this may more fall underline is a hostile work environment. You don't need to have those additional protected classes. It could also fall under workers' compensation. The problem is, and why these cases don't go far, is that even though there may be the initial harassment or let me just explain in terms of workers' comp. So for a hostile worker environment in comp, it almost has to happen over a duration of a year, and it has to come from a person in a supervisory capacity. But not only do you have to have that occur, you have to have it affect you to the point where you have a psychological disability and you're unable to work. And then one other thing I'll get into here is under the hostile work environment, or if you were to pursue these, aside from these actions, you can also pursue under, I believe, the PHRC or EEOC to the extent that there was a hostile or other work issue. Let's see here. So the bottom line is, if you have these issues, there's a lot more to go through on this. I mean, I could probably take up the whole rest of the show just on this one question. But the bottom line is that if it happens, the best thing to do is just make sure you document everything, set up an appointment with an attorney. So this way you can sit down and have a discussion and see what your recourse is. And a lot of times you want to do that early, because a lot of these causes of action require you to exhaust all of the other remedies that may be available to you through the employer. And if you fail to do that, or if you voluntarily leave, or you take any other action without speaking with an attorney, you can very easily waive if there is any claim for you to pursue. So again, the best advice I can give for this, if you find yourself in this situation, the best thing is to reach out to an attorney that deals with these issues so that they can properly guide you along the way to, if it is ongoing, to preserve the evidence so that you're actually going to prevail if you file a case later on, or to at least help posture you so you're in a position to possibly resolve it and not have to file suit.
All right. Pretty in-depth answer there, Keith. On to the next question now. I've contacted the utility company about dead trees near the power lines on my block, stating when the storm comes, it'll knock out power when they fall. Well, they fell. And I've not only lost power, but due to the length of time, lost the food in my deep freezer that costs hundreds of dollars. Do I have a case?
All right. So in this particular case, starting with the utility company's duty and negligence. So duty of care. Under utility companies are generally responsible for maintaining power lines and ensuring they are safe, which includes managing vegetation like dead trees or which are near power lines to prevent outages or safety hazards. There's actually the National Electric Safety Code, NESC, which requires utilities to trim or remove trees and branches near power lines to prevent damages or outages. Notice of the issue, as was indicated. So they stated that they contacted the utility company about the dead trees before the storm. If they can prove that they provided clear notice of the hazard, e.g., you know, for example, written communication, a recorded phone call. Well, you got to be careful to record a phone call unless they're aware of it, or service request, and utility failed to act within the reasonable time frame, that could most definitely strengthen the case. Courts often require evidence that the utility had actual knowledge of a problem and failed to address it. Now, in terms of the recorded phone call, the reason I think they include that in there is because a lot of times when you talk to these companies, when you call them, they say this call is being recorded. you cannot record them, as that would be a felony. So unless you give them consent, you don't want to be recording people, because that's an actual crime. Now, negligence standard. Most utility companies are shielded from liability for outages caused by acts of God, which would be a storm, or ordinary negligence, as outlined in their tariff books. But to hold a utility liable, you typically need to show gross negligence or willful misconduct. So gross negligence might involve reckless disregard for a known hazard, such as failing to address dead trees after being notified. So there's a fine line there, and you know, to be honest with you, there's no way to tell, well, is this going to meet the standard or not. At the end of the day, if this is a case, whether it go before a judge or a jury, based on the evidence, you know, they can either come down either way, but it's going to come down to, I think, in this particular case, if they can prove, and I think this kind of stems similar to when we were talking about the potholes, or different types of injuries when it involves a municipality, is that they have to have written notice of the defect and a reasonable time to correct it. I think that same standard's going to apply here. If they can, you know, if there wasn't a reasonable time to correct it, then they're still not going to be held liable. Now, as far as causation and damages, they would need to prove that the power outage was directly caused by the utility's failure to address the dead trees, meaning that it wasn't caused by the storm or some other means. It's similar to when you have a medical malpractice case. If a doctor misses, say, you know, a diagnosis, if they miss the diagnosis and there's no harm, there's no recourse, especially if the underlying illness is what is responsible for the ongoing injury or limitations. Well, it's the same thing here. If they can't prove that it was the tree that was the specific cause for the power outage, then again, they're not going to be able to meet their case. In terms of damages, so the lost food in the deep freezer, which they estimated the cost at hundreds of dollars, they would need to document those losses with an itemized list of the spoiled food, including receipts, estimate values, and so forth. But to be honest with you, I think the best recourse, and I don't know, and again, it might be excluded again, because if it's a storm under your homeowner's policy, I mean, that's another avenue that you would have, but you would have to see if that's something that would be covered. Because to be honest, if you try to pursue a claim like this, and you're only talking about $100 and some out of pocket, I honestly don't know how you would pursue a claim against them without spending probably, I mean, tenfold or more to try to pursue that claim. And I think that would be the other obstacle of trying to pursue something when your damages are so limited. And then, of course, to the homeowners, depending on what your deductible, if your deductible is more, it might not even cover it. But this is another situation where I think, you know, you want to find an attorney that's not going to charge you for a consultation, that you can come in, sit down, have a discussion, see if there is anything to pursue. I don't think the utility company is just going to say, okay, here's your money. I think the more likelihood of recourse is going to occur if you have potentially a claim against your homeowners or some other insurance. And then if not from there, I think it's going to be something, even if you had a right to pursue, it'd be fairly difficult. Now, if, you know, God forbid there was a severe injury or something that happened, that would change the circumstance altogether, because now you have significant damages. But in a scenario where you have limited damages, I think it makes your options also limited.
All right, Keith, if someone wants to get in touch with you with a question or a situation that they don't want made public, how can they do that?
Well, they can contact me directly either through my website at figuredlaw.com. They can pretty much send an inquiry through there 24 hours a day. Email at keith@figuredlaw, and then my direct dial, which is 570-954-9299.
All right, and if you want a question featured on a segment of Do I Have a Case, you can email me here at the station at rob.odonnell@odyssey.com. Keith, thanks for joining the Rob O'Donnell Show today.
Thank you, Rob. I appreciate it. I hope you and your listeners have a nice weekend.
You too, as well. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show here on WILK News Radio. I just pulled up the radar for the weather here. It does look like we have some storms moving through the Wilkes-Barre, Kingston, Plymouth, Farview, Ashley area, all the way out past Nanticoke, Hunlock, Sweet Valley, just north of Berwick down to Bloomsburg. There's a cell of storms coming through. So if you're in the, I would say Pittston might get hit a little bit with it, south of Pittston into the Fairview, just north of Dorrance, Nanticoke, Wilkes-Barre, all the way out to Bloomsburg. You have some rain coming through the area. And if you're outside of that area, it's going to be hit or miss what you get. It looks like Scranton and Northern Valley is free from a lot of the weather that's coming through. But it does look like an extreme cell. A lot of red and yellow coming through in that Wilkes-Barre, Nanticoke, Hunlock, Sweet Valley, Pleasant Valley area. So just be careful. Take it slow. Get where you're going without any issues. You will have some heavy downpours. You will have pooling. You will have some hydroplaning if your vehicle's not up to snuff. So make sure you're careful. That's all we're telling you. This week, President Trump wrapped up a trade agreement with Japan and some other Pacific Asian nations after threatening the allies with a 25% tariff. And it's actually so good a deal that U.S. automakers are saying that it might put them at an unfair advantage due to the Japanese auto market doing well with this deal. Japan will repay reciprocal tariffs to the United States of 15%. So a far difference than the 25 that was ordered. But again, this is the United States had a $69.4 billion trade deficit with Japan in 2024, and this is to level that playing field. But again, in the way of doing that, I saw some news stories coming up today of the U.S. big three automakers are saying, you know, this may help them a little too much and defeat the purpose of vehicles being made here. Well, if the vehicles are made here, they don't get any tariff. So we'll see where that goes. But again, some good stuff getting done on the tariff front. It is 5:31 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Well, this week, we pause to honor the lives and legacies of icons who have shaped our culture, inspired generations, and left us better than they found us. We say goodbye to voices that once filled our screens, our stadiums, our radios, our arenas, and even our hearts. They weren't just performers or pioneers. They were beacons. People whose talents were matched only by the impact they made beyond the spotlight. Each had a story, some of grit, some of courage, some of excellence. And now those stories, once lived in real time, belong to history. But oh, what a beautiful chapters they wrote. To the artist who painted truth with their words or music, we thank you. You taught us to feel, to question, to reflect. Your lyrics still echo, your notes still ring, your performances still move us. You reminded us of the greatness is not about fame, it's about authenticity. It's about showing up day after day to give the world something it didn't know it needed. To the athlete who defined limits, we remember your strength, not just in victories, but in vulnerability. You are proof that heart matters more than vitamins. That resilience can be louder than a crowd's roar. That character lives long after the final three count. To the leader, the voice of change, the relentless spirit who fought for justice and stood for something when it wasn't easy. You didn't just lead movements, you were the movement. You left footprints not just on the pavement, but in the hearts of those now who carry your torch. And to the unsung heroes, the quiet forces behind the scenes, the mentor, the friend, the family anchor, your legacy might not make headlines, but it lives on in the lives you changed with your kindness, your loyalty, your unwavering presence. Each loss this week reminds us of life's fragility. But more importantly, it reminds us of purpose. These icons didn't live forever, but they lived fully. They dared, they created, they stood tall. And now, it's our turn to carry their lessons forward, to honor their memory, not just with words, but with action, to strive, to care, to leave our corner of the world of the ring a little bit brighter, just as they did. So rest in power to the icons we lost this week. Somewhere on that crazy train, you may be gone from our sight, but let me tell you something, brother. Never from our stories. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show. It's 5:45 as we start to wind things down. 85 degrees with those storms moving through the Wilkes-Barre area now, so be careful if you're driving around out there. Jake, we got that monologue in just under the wire from the EAS, right?
Right as you were done.
Right as I was
came
done.
Right on.
I enjoy getting those monologues together. And
they're great,
you know,
man.
Trying to fit in here. And, you know, I would have loved to put it to a Chuck Mangione, you know, one of his songs that he did. But the thing is, when we put it out on podcast, we have an issue with different songs.
Yeah.
We have to find non-copyrighted music to do. You think we're a radio station and we should have the rights and ability to all these things.
Obviously, there's plenty of Ozzy songs I would have used.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. We do have the boss in the studio here. And by boss, I don't mean Ryan or Nancy. I mean the missus is here in the studio. So, because I said we're on our journey today. We're not going to talk about it again because we don't want to piss anybody off. People were mad. I was talking about, guiding our daughter through the purchase of her new vehicle and how we saved money. Well, you talk too much about my family, so I'm a news station. I shouldn't be talking about my family, but that was one or two.
There's always a dial, buddy.
There's always a dial, buddy. So Goodbye to Romance was grossly overlooked this week. Good pick. That was all Jake. That was all Jake. He got mad that the EAS chipped in at the end of the monologue. And he says, I'm going to play this song because it's fitting. And he's absolutely right. We have about 10 minutes left. So if you want to text something in, get it into us, let us know what you're doing this weekend. What plans do you have? The weekend doesn't look bad. I mean, again, it's going to be in the 90s sun, stray storm or shower coming through the area. So, hopefully my wife doesn't beat me this weekend. We'll see. Jake's laughing. But we'll see what happens. But again, you got some time to get some text message in if you want. The last story I have today is there's nearly a $50 million project to transform the Abington Middle School. And again, this is a story coming out of the Times Tribune by Robert Tomkavich. Did a great story on it. They had a big groundbreaking ceremony, even though it's been going on for a while now. But they had all the hard hats and, the shiny shovels that are just for ceremonial uses only that someone collects right after it's over. But it is really great for the students up there. The Abington Heights officials strive to improve the entire educational experience for students. A $49.5 million project will enhance the middle school's property for generations of children. And if you've ever been to the Abington Heights Middle School, it's a very antiquated school. It was built at a time, a long time ago, to fit the needs, and we have long outgrown those needs, just as many school districts around Northeast Pennsylvania have done. But on Thursday morning, administrators and students broke ground on the project, which will include a 70,000-square-foot addition featuring a new administrative suite, more than 20 new classrooms, and an 800-seat gymnasium. Additionally, the project expects to be finished by the fall of 2027, includes renovations on about 17,000 square foot of space in the existing building, and upgrades to the athletic fields, parking, and site access. Specifically, an access road behind the building expected to help eliminate traffic congestion going into the school, as per the Abington Heights superintendent. And hopefully stop the parents from sneaking around the back of the school into the parking lot. They said, we've been working with several engineering partners as well as the township, and we believe that we'll be able to stop the queuing in the main road, superintendent said. By queuing, they mean the traffic backing up onto the main road during pickup and drop-off. There's going to be a huge parking lot that will allow people to circle around, and that will allow more cars into the middle school property and take them off the main road. The project is being paid for primarily through municipal bonds and additional money from the district's capital reserve fund. A capital reserve fund. Did you hear that? Everybody, townships, municipalities, counties, other school districts, a capital reserve fund. What a capital reserve fund is you have capital expenses. How long is it going to be till we need a new roof? How long is it going to be till we need new vehicles? How long is it going to be till we need new zero-turn lawnmowers to maintain our property. And you plan all that out and you save for it. You have your operating budget, which is your year-to-year operations. How much are we going to pay staff? How much do we need to pay our electricity bills? How much do we need in food for our students? How much do we need to maintain the day-to-day operations? That's your operational budget. Your capital reserve budget means everything and anything that needs to be replaced one time or another, you should start saving for years in advance. For a roof, if you have a roof that has a 30-year life expectancy, well, you have 30 years to plan and save for a new roof. So when you finally do need a new roof, which everyone is going to need sooner or later, sometimes sooner, sometimes later, you have that money already saved. You don't have to bang the taxpayer over the head with a special assessment. You don't have to bang them over the head with a huge tax increase, because for 30 years, you performed your fiduciary duties as a township board, as a school board, as a county commissioner's board, and you've saved that money for 30 years. So when it's time to replace that roof, when it's time to replace that fleet of vehicles, when it's time to replace those deep freezers in your kitchens or your stoves or whatever else you have, all that's set across. Now, we used to get capital reserve plans done every 2 to 4 years, and they need to be 2 to 5 years, and they need to be revised because they're not written in stone. It's a guide like anything else. If you have a roof that's worth 30 years, has a 30-year life expectancy, and how do you find out what these things are? Well, you have a capital reserve company come in. And they look at everything. And then they look at the warranties of your assets. They look at the lifespan, how much you use it, what's the history behind this, how often do you normally need to replace it. You know, maybe the lifespan for a zero-turn lawnmower for your property, for your commercial property or school district property or township parks is 10 years. Well, because of the hilly terrain and there's a lot of rocks and, you know, it gets more of a beating than it does. We only get about 7 years out of it. Okay. The engineers are going to look at that and say, let's put 7 years to be on the safe side. And if you get 8 years, if you get 9 years, if you get the full 10 years, great, because you're still saving that money. And when it's time to replace it, you replace it. Or you trade it in at a higher value, make some money back on it, and then you buy the new. Capital reserve programs are one of the most underutilized things that I found in Northeast Pennsylvania and as a whole. A lot of communities, a lot of private entities are mandated by law to have capital reserve programs. And again, they need to be reviewed, some states by law, every 2 to 5 years. And you modify it. Okay, well, if your roof had a 30-year life expectancy, well, it doesn't look like we're going to make 30 years out of that. 2 years, 5 years later, when you reevaluate that plan, you can say, all right, let's lower that to 25 years because we don't think we're going to hit that. You want to be as close to the actual as you can, but it's never going to be. Listen, you have a pickup trucks for your facility, and you're expecting to get 5 to 6 years out of them because you get a lot of use out of your utility pickup trucks. They get beaten up pretty well, even though you maintain them properly and you do the best you can. Say it breaks down sooner than later. Well, you can't avoid that. These things do happen. And you have to take that into consideration. All right, so we'll move things around and we'll be able to get that this year. We can hold off on the zero-turn lawnmower till next year, and there's where we save that difference. By next year, we'll have the money. The fact that the Abington School District is using capital reserve funds to fund a lot of this is great. Now, with a project this size, $49.5 million, obviously you cannot fund the entire thing through a capital reserve plan. But in a perfect world without expansions and additions, if you're just maintaining what you have, because that's all a capital reserve plan does. It cannot project, okay, we're going to need a new building, or we're going to need to grow because of student population, or we're going to take on additional assets. A capital reserve plan only deals with the assets you currently have, the capital assets you have in your possession. So again, things grow, things change, which often happens with a school district, which is why you have to go into municipal bonds for this as well. But to hear that there's capital reserve program funds being used for this, and a lot of entities will say, oh yeah, we got a capital reserve fund. And it's one of the reasons I am so critical of when we talk about this train service from New York to Scranton. Well, what plans are being made for the expansion that's going to mandate? What are we doing to plan for the additional police staffing that we're going to need, the additional police vehicles we're going to need, the additional fire staffing we're going to need, the additional public works vehicles we're going to need, because you're going to be plowing roads more. You're going to be maintaining roads more. There's going to be higher traffic, and they're going to be falling apart quicker in Scranton, if you could believe that. And without that planning, without saying, hey, we need to start setting money aside now for the growth that we're expecting because they're bringing this service here, or at least they want the same politicians who want these services here aren't planning for these services here. They're hoping on a wish and a prayer that the federal dollars come through to get it here. But once it does and it comes to fruition, then what? Well, the only way they're going to pay for these extra services, these extra assets, these extra vehicles, the extra hours in operation for city employees is to tax the hell out of you more because they're not saving for it now. Or cut other things. That's the only place money comes from. You either increase revenue, cut things, or tax people higher. If you go to any meeting, be it your school board, be it your township meetings, your county meetings, your city meeting, anything, what's the status of your capital reserve plan? How often it is reviewed for? What capital reserve company do you have come in with engineers to look at the assets to get a good handle on it? Not, oh, we had Joe, the manager of Public Works, give us an estimate. No, no. You need a capital reserve company to come in and actually do this professionally. And in a lot of entities, again, like private communities, HOAs, and such like that, it's mandated by their bylaws or by law. But when it comes to the public entities that we all fall into the tax base for, not so much. So it's great to see some things happening in our local school district. It's good to see everyone on the same page and happy about the expansion. Again, a completion date of fall of 2027 is a long way out. So we'll be keeping an eye on it. Hopefully it comes in on or under budget and on time. It's 5:56 here at WILK. We'll be back with the Rob O'Donnell Show to close it down. I don't know, Jake. Lisa's in here pressing buttons on the TV screen. She's trying to answer phone lines that aren't ringing. I don't know what's going on here. A lot of text messages coming in. One of the listeners are headed out to Savannah Bananas on Saturday. They are phenomenal. You're going to love them. I saw them when they first got started, and you're going to have a good time at that. This is Rob, I love when you talk about the family, so much meaning and so much at stake. Yep. Hello, Mrs. O'Donnell. Lovely to hear from you again. Go ahead and beat him, the Jersey Devil. Safe travels. Good luck, Rob, on your journey tonight. Tell us about the 7-hour journey. Lots of crab meat down there. Well, Maryland's crab meat, but there is the seafood, and that's Fred from Dallas checking in there. So you guys, while we're gone, take care of yourselves, behave, be well to each other. Jake will have the monologue up on social media and some other of the events from today's show. But weather's not going to be a washout. What'd you
say? One of them is the very first segment.
The very first segment.
That's going to be uploaded for sure.
There you go. That'll get a fun, all the trolls on the WILK Facebook page. They come out. It's interesting because these guys block me on social media and then they go to the WILK Facebook page to talk crap. It's 6 o'clock here at WILK. We will see you on Monday.